Hello, everybody. It's December 17th, 2017, and we are going to be doing Observing Our Limits. This is Ann Costello, and we are going to have wonderful people from California, Cheryl Kempinski, who's been on the board for many years, and Donna Shields, who's also been on the board for many years at NEABPD, and they're going to be doing Observing Limits. And when Cheryl is finished in the beginning part, you can stop and ask questions. And otherwise, you can wait until the end. And I'm asking everybody to please mute. And we'll start right now. Go ahead, girls.
Hi, everybody. This is Cheryl. I thought Donna and I would take a couple minutes and just introduce ourselves. In addition to being on the board of directors, I'm a clinician in private practice, having practiced dialectical behavior therapy for a good part of 23 years, as well as other evidence-based treatments. And my interest and love for borderline personality disorder is very longstanding, and I am so happy to be here today and proud to be a part of Family Connections training as a leader, and so glad you're all listening today. Donna, you want to say a little bit about yourself?
I thought you were going to introduce me, too. Oh. I was just sending out the last-minute slides for anybody who didn't get them, so I hope everybody has them who wanted them. I'm Donna Shields, and I am a social worker by training, but I have not practiced in many years, and I really feel my background for this session and all others is the fact that I'm a mother of a 29-year-old daughter who has borderline personality disorder. So I've been living this for a long time and continue to live it. So that's all I have to say.
Thanks, everybody, and thanks, Donna, and thanks to Ann and Matt for organizing this series and inviting us for the third time presenting this topic. This year, Donna and I have made a few revisions in our slides, and we've also added a few ideas from experts in the field. So for those of you who have listened to us and heard this before, you might find something new. And certainly for those who have not, hopefully we will shed some light on this very, very difficult but also important topic.
And that's my cue to enter with, in putting this session together, we tried to look at all the resources we have, and knowing that as a leader, as ourselves, that it's difficult sometimes not only with the topic, but to integrate all of the resource materials. So you'll see that we have identified where we've pulled things from, but if you have any other questions at the end, we're more than happy to cite where we found things, because these aren't all of our own personal ideas. They're borrowed from experts in the field.
So why we chose this topic? In the course of our teaching, Family Connections, and even talking to many leaders, we've heard that as the Family Connections course has moved into the more interpersonal realm, the material becomes more difficult to sometimes teach and also to enact effectively. Observing Limits is certainly one of those examples, as we see it both as a self-validating strategy and as an interpersonal skill. So today what we're going to do, we're going to give you a little background and history on the topic of limits or the idea of limits. We're going to show you some and give you some teaching points in the Family Connection material. And if anyone has any ideas, and we hope that you think about some ideas of where you would love to practice Observing Limits, Donna and I will be more than happy to role play for you. So let's look at slide number 2, where we've outlined some background. Historically, in diagnosing, describing, and treating borderline personality disorder, these ideas of boundary crossing, and boundary limits were and oftentimes used, especially in the context of understanding somebody or observing someone as being manipulative. So this idea of boundary crossing have been used when also referring to a sense of one's identity, particularly in the context of relationships. So of course we've all heard such expressions, or we've been told, you need to set boundaries, or she's crossing a boundary, or that person has boundary issues. And we hear that today. I was just actually telling Donna that I received a brochure for training for clinicians with the topic of setting boundaries in clinical practice. But as we all know, among people with borderline personality disorder, hearing these phrases are oftentimes interpreted as being pushed away, abandoned, being judged, and of course stigmatized. In 1993, Marsha Linehan came along as the developer of dialectical behavior therapy, and as I like to think, clarified our thinking on this topic, where she said, and I quote at the bottom of that slide, observing limits addresses all behaviors that push or cross the therapist's own personal limits. She thought of this as a contingency procedure. In other words, if this happens, then this will be the result or the outcome. And she thought of it as a technique or a strategy for the therapist to make decisions on what the therapist will or will not accept in response to the patient's behaviors. And as we all know, Family Connections has been adapted by Drs. Grizzetti and Hoffman from dialectical behavior therapy. Just to illustrate how common it is in our world, in our culture and society, slide 3 is a cute little cartoon that Donna found that really exemplifies how this idea of boundaries and how people tell each other or give them guidelines that it's important to set boundaries is used. And even the little character in the third frame says, oh, I don't think I could get him to have boundaries. So it truly is difficult. Slide number 4. Let's take a look at the idea of limits versus boundaries as constructs. So boundaries in this slide are exemplified by being set in stone, impermeable and inflexible like a wall, and once set, they just don't change. And I think all of us can think of our interactions with our loved ones and in every aspect of our lives that if we say something, oftentimes circumstances change and our minds change. So that highlights one of the difficulties of boundaries. Limits, on the other hand, can be flexible, fluid. They can be changeable as circumstances change. We all change our minds. They can be extended or relaxed. And most importantly, they reflect our needs, which is why, as we'll talk about in a few minutes, observing boundaries and noting our boundaries and communicating our boundaries has as much to do with ourselves as it is, does with another person. Slide number 5. So bringing it down to our Family Connections course and how it relates, we understand, teaching Family Connections, that we each have different limits in relations to the behaviors of our loved ones in particular. And as we always teach in Family Connections, by being mindful, observing ourselves, taking care of our loved ones comes right after taking care of ourselves. So as we all say and teach in our class, putting on that oxygen mask, as the admonition goes in an airplane as we're preparing for a flight, putting that mask on ourselves comes first before helping our loved ones. And I think as we all sit back and think about our lives and our own personal relationships and work, and even with ourselves, that this is a very important concept to apply to every context of our lives, not just interacting with our loved one. Donna.
I wanted to say, and I don't know if you're aware of it, but you use setting your boundaries instead of setting your limits. And I think it's a wonderful example for the teaching, is that when I'm teaching this topic, I generally say I'd like to explain how I see the difference between limits and boundaries and use a slide such as the one Cheryl just went over. But in the end, because of habit and how we usually just talk and what comes out of our mouths, we often will switch the word boundaries for limits. So even more important than using the correct term, I don't get hung up on the term, and I encourage the students in my class not to get hung up on that, but to understand that what we're talking about is not setting a line or a territory around the other person, that we're really talking about how far and how, what we will do, what we will say, what we will take, what we won't take. So that's what's critical. For today, and I'm on slide 6, our goals. We want to offer an enhanced background on the topic and to clarify, again, the topic of limits or the term limits versus boundaries, to provide some additional teaching points for this area of family connections, and to provide some application activities, because as all leaders know, the information is only one level, but the application is what's critical. And we want the family members in our classes to be able to go out and use the techniques and integrate the things that we have taught them in their daily lives, and provide a template for a follow-up class on the topic. And I know in many discussions, leaders have said, you know, there really isn't enough time to go over all these things and present the information and have practice and do role plays and all of that. So a number of leaders have gone to doing follow-on sessions where people who have already taken the class and been presented with the information then have a chance to really dig into a particular topic. And it's in that situation where they get into doing some of the more extensive activities, so just to clarify that. One specific goal, and I'm on slide 7 now, of family connections is to understand how to manage our own emotional responses to situations in our relationships, particularly in the face of emotion dysregulation, demands, requests, or pleas. And this is really the critical piece for family members, is what kind of responses are you having? How are you reacting? How do you want to react? Not how can we make somebody else do something or not do something. So if we think of our behavior in context of what we will or won't, can or cannot accept by learning skills to help respond in different, but, and the key word is, effective ways. Thus, we're increasing our self-awareness by paying attention to our experiences, in other words, being mindful of how we're responding to how we're feeling about things and how we're responding to the situation, our emotions and comfort zone, as we continue to notice and observe ourselves. And this is not an easy type of interaction to have with people, because it's usually highly charged. And for those of us who interact with folks that have borderline personality disorder, their emotions can become raised very, very quickly. And at that point, it's more difficult to have a, and I'm doing air quotes now, a logical or a teaching moment with our loved ones. So that's what we're hoping we will do. What family connections teaches is observe. And observe first appears in our discussion of mindfulness, and that's in Module 3, Relationship Mindfulness Skills. Well, we recommend that participants stop and take notice of their reactions and then attempt to regulate. And, in fact, when we get into some of the specific techniques, the very first thing people say is, well, how do I know what my limits are? And for some people, it's when they get a not in their stomach, for other people when they clench their teeth or clench their fists, or others when their heart rate starts going faster, but being aware of our own body reactions. The aim of this module is to offer ways of looking at relationships and to consider our attitudes, and that's relationship mindfulness is being mindful of the other person or your current conversation or transaction with another person. In other words, paying attention to him or her, getting and staying balanced, keeping focused on the relationship, and the consequences of your behavior on it. It's an awful lot to stay focused on, be mindful of, and come up with something in the very moment. It is not easy. The skill is observing ourselves, identifying our experience, and ultimately regulating our emotions. And this is very difficult on the spot, and that's why we're asking you to when you're thinking about limits or teaching, setting, observing your limits, that you do some pre-work, which is some self-work yourself, which is what are my limits and whatever. So we'll get into that in a moment. So what we teach in Family Connections, and this is on slide 9, observing your limits appears in Module 5 under validation skills. As we move from self-observation of our emotions to acknowledging and understanding through validation to observing what is acceptable to us, one way to look at it is observing your limits is or is not. It is not setting boundaries. It is not making ultimatums and threats. It is not drawing the line, digging your heels in and saying, this is it, and I'm not going to go any farther. What it is recognizing in advance, in general, how do you want to behave? What are you willing to do? Recognizing what you are willing to accept and recognizing what you are willing to give. And a very quick example that I use in classes is I talk about swearing. And for some people, when someone uses swear words, it just raises the hair on the back of their neck and they can't listen or go any further. Other people say, oh, you know what, I use those words, my family uses those words, and I don't get all upset about them. So I bring this up as an example to say that everybody is different in what they're willing to do, what they're willing to say, how far they're willing to go. And so it's not yes, these are good ones, these are bad ones. It's really being aware of what your limits are and observing them in your interactions with your loved one. Okay, Cheryl, you're on.
Can I just interject?
Sure.
I remember when you last year you spoke about this, and we brought it back to our alumni group, and we were able to spend much more time on it. It's when you spend, you know, because I think you mentioned just talking now, spending time in this. If you're a new leader listening to this, what you're hearing is really, really important, because it's a skill that's on one page and you move right past it. But for people, it's really a lifeline, and to get it as clear as possible, and this is really helpful in that regard. So thank you.
Oh, thank you, Matt, for clarifying. And it is true. We tried to identify where it was brought up in the modules, because in some sense, you feel like you're jumping around in this and that, and you have to focus on the topic at hand. But truly, we need to integrate these as we go along. And don't be too hard on yourself, because it isn't easy to do the first time. And make sure that you let the family members in your class know that it is something that just does not come off the bat. Most people aren't terrific at it the first time they try, and it takes constant practice. So thank you.
And that's another key point, the integration. Like, the skills are taught sort of in isolation, but really in use, they should be completely integrated. So that's
right.
Good to keep in mind, too. Thanks.
Okay. Cheryl?
Yes, I am absolutely non-verbally nodding my head. It's absolutely true what you're both saying, Matt and Donna, because even the use of the word observe, we're trying to even change the way we think about self-respect for example, or in our material self-validation. We're trying to change the way we think about that from setting or boundaries to just observe. And observe, of course, is a skill of mindfulness. And as I teach this, I'm always reminding everyone or offering a little pop quiz. Now, where have you heard that word observe before? So we want to integrate our material as best as we can. Slide number 10, I think, is a great summary. When we say that observing your limits is a learned skill acquired over time, particularly through noticing your experience of how you're feeling, thinking, and even what you want in every particular situation specific to our behavior. So it's, how do I want this to turn out? Or what would I like for myself? And then maybe I could use observing a limit, my limits, as a strategy. Think of it as a strategy. I think it helps also to use that word because, and this is a little bit of a digression, but this idea of manipulation can be very pejorative, especially when used in the context of someone with borderline personality disorder. But if we think of ourselves and even our loved ones as being strategic, and whether one particular strategy is effective over another, also thinking of it as an effective strategy might also help conceptualize what your limits might be. Slide number 11, also a little aid in that. How to identify and communicate. You notice we put identify first. First, we have to know what we want. So again, observe our physical sensations. Observe your thoughts and your action urges in response to a particular situation or experience with a person. Identify or note what behavior may have caused your reaction and define what you did or did not like about this situation or behavior. And then decide whether you want to communicate this limit to the person based on how much you value the relationship and how important it is to maintain this relationship. And in the material, in the teaching material of Module 5, observing limits comes right before some of the interpersonal effectiveness skills. So being able to know yourself and identify what it is that you want out of the particular situation will certainly help you take the next step in communicating it. Slide number 12. We've outlined some what we think are succinct steps to identify and communicate your limits. So in summary, observe your experience, notice whether a limit is being crossed, violated, pushed, put upon. There are lots of different ways to express that feeling. Decide whether to communicate that your limit has been crossed, and if so, communicate this with your loved one. But begin by regulating your own emotion if needed. As Donna was saying a few minutes ago, that can be a very clear litmus test. Having a visceral reaction, having an emotional reaction, feeling negative or judgmental about yourself as a result of a particular interaction. Slide number 13. So now you've observed, you've noticed yourself, you've definitely identified that a limit has been crossed. How do you communicate this? Well, here's some steps that we borrowed from Sherry Manning with her permission. Here's an outline of how to communicate your limit. Tell the person ahead of time what you plan to do. Give that person a chance to modify behavior and follow through, remaining consistent across time. Remember, validate and soothe your loved one's emotions about having the limit established. This, for many of us, is going to be a new behavior, It's going to be something new that our loved one is going to hear for the first time. And I think it can be effective in our teaching, in our classes, that we might even role play that particular scenario, that somebody might hear something for the first time and you may be saying something for the first time to someone, and what that scenario and how that scenario might play out. And finally, assure your loved one that you'll be available at a future time for a different issue. So in other words, we're minimizing this potential to alienate or abandon or appear that we're rejecting our loved ones, that we're engaging in a validating type communication about our limit. Slide number 14. Most important, communicate ahead of time. Not when you're involved in a heated situation. So know your limits. Use your described skills of mindfulness to clearly explain the situation to the best of your ability. And I also might note here, sometimes it's good even to practice with a friend or a partner who's not involved in the situation, to sort of practice and rehearse that a few times just so that you can communicate in the way that you really want to and intend to. Express your feelings about the situation. As I said a minute ago, validate and soothe. State your limit. And as often when we change the way we interact or what we might say to a person, anticipate an increased emotional response and just start validating and soothing. And validating, of course, that this is something new. We've never been in this situation before. I've never asked this of you. I've never expected this of you, etc. And also, be willing to problem solve. Problem solve with your loved one behaviors that might avoid crossing a limit. So you might offer some strategies that could possibly be effective. Slide number 15, communicating limits. Now, we took this summary, which is very much along the lines of what is in our material, of course, what Marshall Linehan, Sherry Manning, Drs. Frazetti, and Hoffman have mentioned. But most of us are familiar with John Gunderson's wonderful pamphlet entitled Family Guidelines, which is where we borrowed this little summary. Dr. Gunderson says, be direct but careful. State the limits of your tolerance. Let your expectations be known. State your expectations in clear, simple language. Make no assumptions. Avoid threats. And offer limits as a way of shifting responsibility to our loved one. I'm wondering if there are any questions at this point. It's a lot of material and a lot of new ideas. All right, well, we'll ask again. Donna.
All right, I just want to reinforce that the idea of using behavioral terms, one of the things that comes to mind as a statement of, well, that person should just man up or woman up, and that really doesn't help someone know what it is you're looking for. And so this idea of taking your own responses and saying, well, gee, what do I really want from that person? What am I expecting to hear? What am I expecting them to do? So it's a specific action, and that may be helpful and is the first part of identifying before you communicate. Generalizations, big categories, multiple things at one time make it a lot more difficult. This is a new slide, number 16, that we added. And what we want you to do is to think of a situation where you feel put upon or pushed to do or accept something that you might normally not do, or times you might allow yourself to be treated in a way you never thought you'd accept. That's to get you into it. Cheryl and I brainstormed some things that have come up over and over and over again, particularly when living with a loved one, when they're in your home, what time they come home, what their responsibilities are in the home. For example, how clean they have to keep their bedroom or their own personal space, helping with the dishes, whether they have to help in if they finish a particular thing in the refrigerator that they need to make sure that they replace it. Whatever, and again, whatever your specific situation calls for, responsibilities for the person themselves, such as working or not working, being to work on time, not being to work on time, personal hygiene, I know almost always comes up. Financial issues, certainly what you expect your loved one how you expect them to contribute, what you're willing to contribute, when you're willing to bend or not bend. Here's another one, which is participation in family events. Do you expect your loved one to be there? Do you expect them to be fully participating? Do you expect them to not come if they're in a bad mood? There's all different things around that. And finally, one that comes to mind also is participation in recovery, medication compliance, their involvement in support groups, their participation in therapy. Now, when your loved one is not living with you, there's certainly telephone and communication issues around how long the calls can be. Can they call you when you're at work? Can they call you after 12 o'clock at night? Can they call you before 8 o'clock in the morning? And again, no right or wrong. Financial issues as well, participation again in family events, and participation in recovery. But if you would think, if you haven't come up with some areas that you find difficult in setting your limits so that you can then communicate them and observe them with your loved ones, it's a good time to start. So now we have the let's try it out. And this is a true interaction that I've had with my daughter. And think of a limit you commonly use with your loved one. And I will share with you that my daughter typically she does not drive, and so I do a lot of driving and picking up and taking her places and whatever. And when she has me in the car and I'm driving and we're in traffic and whatever, she chooses to bring up a situation where she has had a problem with how I've reacted or whatever. And so identifying what I can or will not tolerate is I have zero tolerance for any kind of distraction which may lead to an accident. So while I'm not interested in her hearing some of her complaints or her issues, particularly as she gets more heated, I can't focus on what she's saying and pay attention to the traffic at the same time. So I have, after the first couple of times that it happened, I have had conversations with her where I've said, you know, when I'm driving and paying attention to what's going on in the car or the traffic and whatever, I really can't focus 100% on what your issues and concerns are. And I would hate to put us in jeopardy of having an accident. So this is an example that I use where it was pretty clear to me what my issues were and what I was willing to tolerate and not willing to tolerate. And in fact, I have had to, on occasion, pull the car over to the side of the road and stop because she will become dysregulated and isn't able to calm herself down. So I will say, and just so you know, I don't do this perfectly, and it took many, many, many times trying this. But now I will say when she starts something, do I need to pull over? Is this a conversation we can have later, or is this something that must be addressed right now? Because I can't concentrate on the topic and you and the traffic at the same time. And I have had to, on many occasions, pull the car over, and she knows. And it's to the point now where when I say that to her, it's enough of a prompt to have her try to self-soothe or to postpone a conversation until later. And I want to remind you that there's no right or wrong in regard to the decision. It's totally up to you to make the best decision for you. It's all about you and what you will do and what you want and being clear about that and communicating that to your loved one. Now, what if your loved one doesn't respond well, doesn't modify their behavior, or becomes even more dysregulated? And you know what? Chances are that's what's going to happen. And what do we always say in those kinds of situations? Validate, validate, validate. Honey, I know it's hard for you when you have something on your mind and you don't get to talk to me all the time by yourself and you really want to talk something out and whatever. I know it's hard to stop. I really do. And on the other hand, I also know that I have to focus on being careful while I'm driving. Moving on to slide 19, thoughts and strategies for sticking to your limits. Some people are really good at identifying what their limits are and even good at communicating, but they have a hard time sticking to their limits. In other words, they just, okay, not this time, or whatever. And this makes it very difficult for our loved ones to know, do we really mean it or do we not really mean it? So strategies for sticking to your limits is be a broken record, repeating alternative versions of your limit. Yes, honey, I know you want to talk about this right now. Yes, I know it's on your mind, and yes, I know that it's very important to you, and I really can't talk about it right now. How about when we get to where we're going, we'll stop for a few minutes and talk about it then. Communicate that limits are about us and our behaviors, not those of our loved ones, and therefore are good. You know that I want to drive carefully. You know I don't want to have an accident. And you know I care about you. But this is really for our safety. And you know safety is one of those areas where I'm not very flexible. You want to soothe their disappointing reactions to the limits and perhaps offer alternatives, such as we can talk about it later, or do you want to pull over and talk about it now, depending on what the situation is. Validate how difficult it is to have this shift in the relationship and perhaps not getting what he or she wants. And one thing that helps me in this is I remember that not only am I interacting with my loved one, but I'm also demonstrating to her some alternative ways of behaving that I hope will be modeling for her desirable behavior. So it's on many levels, and it's really for me, and so that we can have a better relationship, and hopefully she will then be able to do that in her relationship. Be honest in setting a limit and why you're setting and how it relates to you or someone else in your life, and remember that giving in will probably not be effective in the long run. Now, that being said, it doesn't mean that there will be times that you will assess the situation and say, in this situation, I am going to make this decision, but I want you to know this is not how I will respond in other kinds of situations to help them understand. More thoughts for your strategies for sticking to your limits. It may be difficult for your loved one as this is a new behavior on your part and will likely evoke emotions that perhaps make you want to reconsider. And that is, if you've always behaved in a certain way and suddenly you're doing it differently, that already gets your loved one in the position to say, oh, no, what's going on now? This is not usually what she does or what he does or whatever, and I can't believe that this is really what they want, so I'm just going to continue on with what I do, and maybe we'll get through this and I can get what I want. And part of that is really communicating with your loved one about how you're doing things differently. And, yes, you realize this is a different way. And you're used to me just saying, okay, okay, do whatever you want and giving in or whatever it may be. But you have chosen to take a new path and line. Guilt, shame, and fear may be evoked in you, which will also make you want to reconsider. It's tough. Give careful thought to setting limits and take your time in this process, particularly ahead of time. And that where Cheryl mentioned you may want to practice, I found that, and particularly with my husband, where sometimes we have a different approach to things, it's very important that he and I talk about what I'm trying to accomplish. And sometimes he will not agree with my strategy, and I will say, I would really appreciate it if you would go along and support my way of handling this, because if you don't, it makes it more difficult. And vice versa, he also says to me, I want to do this with so-and-so, and this is what I'm trying to accomplish, and I know you may not agree 100% with what I'm doing, but can you back me up in this? And it's better if we talk about it ahead of time, because if I don't back him up and we don't talk about it ahead of time, I may sabotage what he's trying to do. So there's a lot of discussion and interaction ahead of time and afterwards, processing what the interaction may have been and how we might like to do it differently. Be willing to change a limit if circumstances change, but be careful about inconsistencies and backing down. And I know that sounds like we're talking out of both sides of our mouths, and we are. But the truth is that sometimes the situation calls for a different action or reaction or whatever. And you don't want to be so hard and fast that you absolutely won't take into account what's happening at the moment. All right, Cheryl?
Wonderful. Thanks, Donna. I had a couple comments. I think you mentioned an interesting dialectic, because on the one hand, we're saying be a broken record, and yet on the other hand, sometimes circumstances will change and we may have to back down. But that's really true of all of our relationships and different strategies or skills that we're using, job effective and fulfilling and rewarding and satisfying outcomes. As we continue, I just want to mention, please, everyone, mute your phone just so our record, for the purposes of our recording, just so it's clear. And in a few minutes, we'll ask you to unmute with your questions. Moving on, slide number 21. So our slides number 21, 22, and 23 are example for teaching slides. For those of you who like teaching family connections using the slides as a wonderful addition to the printed material, we've given you a few slides of our own with examples of the slides. So our slide number 21 has two examples. Slide number 22. I love slide number 22 that begins, when all is said and done, the most validating concept is the importance of the other person in your life and the importance of the relationship. And while observing limits can often sound harsh and strict and perhaps out of character at the beginning, the goal, of course, and this is what we want to remind our loved one, and I think this is what Donna was exemplifying in her driving example, is that we want to be safe, we want to have effective relationships, and we want to be fulfilled and enjoy each other. Our slide number 23, a couple of other examples of how you can incorporate these teaching strategies into your class.
Okay. The next one is an actual class practice. And this does take a fair amount of time. But as I said in the beginning, it's always wonderful to be able to take personal information or personal situations and work it through in the context of the class and to be able to get feedback. So this one is asking participants to spend 2 or 3 minutes writing down on a piece of paper general areas. And they can start with something in their life. It could be with a loved one, but it's sometimes easier to talk about just work relationships or friends or neighbors or whatever. And then have them pair up with another participant, preferably one that they don't know well, and spend 2 minutes where they're describing what their limits are and how they're going to communicate that. And sometimes in just saying it, it helps you to clarify. And certainly if it's the reason why we have them pair up with somebody they don't know is that then they don't bring their own situation into it. They are listening, being active listeners, and giving them some feedback. Then give pairs 5 minutes to choose one item on each list to use for the rest of the exercise and to clarify the limit in, again, this is the behavioral terms. And the behavioral term is, I will only wait 15 minutes for a table at a restaurant. And if it's longer than that, I say, oh, thank you anyway. If the wait is 30 minutes, that's one of my limits. And I say, thank you, but I'll have to find another restaurant. But that's a very specific way, so it's real clear for me and clear to the other people that I'm with. Then give pairs 5 more minutes to share with their partner how they knew what their limit was, how they came up with the limit, how they refined it, or how they would like to refine it. And then we bring it back to the group and ask if anyone wants to share something about their experience. And there are usually a lot of real good talking or teaching points about how difficult it is, how I thought I was communicating clearly, but I wasn't. And this is where participants in the class really can take on the role and help each other with it. And it's very powerful. And again, by starting with something that is a little less emotionally intense for them, then it's easier to get into it and do the sharing with other people. Also, there are a couple more exercises that are listed in, it was at Module 5. I wrote down Module, and I forgot to write down the number, Cheryl.
Yes, yes,
Module 5. I think so.
Yes, yes.
That were in there as the activities.
Yes,
but anyway, that's that. And Cheryl, you want to take final thoughts?
Oh, final thoughts. Well, we hope we've offered you some new ways of teaching this concept, this behavior, and this skill, and offered you some meaningful examples, not only for teaching, but for your own lives. Of course, not all will fit for everyone, but with suggestions, we can communicate to our classes enough ideas from which to practice. I think the practicing is also important. Are there any questions at this juncture? We have a little time.
Yeah, I have a question. We have a lot of family members who constantly say that they're feeling they're enabling their children. And you have that on 23. There's the fine line between enabling and being supportive. Can you give us a little bit of information about that as a clinicians?
Well, the word enabling, in my way of thinking, is a little bit of a judgment. I think a better way, I would not use that word, and I know that that's a very common word in the conversation of working families with their loved ones. I think that the question has to be about, I think the conversation has to be more about development and helping someone grow and mature. And I think that there certainly is a fine line in being overly helpful. I would take out that word enabling and use overly helpful versus and supportive, and looking at how we can encourage someone's growth. So oftentimes we will financially support our loved ones for a very, very long time. I have a particular case right now that I'm working with, and all of a sudden the parents became very frustrated over a particular situation and said, that's it. I'm stopping my financial support in 2 months. And that was a little abrupt of a limit, and of course I tried to facilitate a conversation of negotiation and of looking at the pros and cons and collaborating a more effective resolution for this particular family. I think that when we start to feel that we're doing something wrong, we might start to feel that we're self-judging. And I think that we have to start by even self-soothing and validating ourselves and asking us, what is our goal here? What do we want in this relationship for ourselves and for our loved ones?
Yeah,
and
perfect.
Try to find a balance. Yeah.
Thank you.
You're welcome. We learn in DBT and we teach in Family Connections that the words we use are so important.
Yeah.
And when Donna and I recently did a weekend class, we noted to everyone in the class that from time to time we were going to hear a word here and there that might sound a little judgmental, and we were going to sound the bell and bring everybody's attention to that. Not that we were criticizing the judgment or judging the judgment, but we were bringing our attention to how we describe and talk about ourselves and our loved ones. And just like we practice mindfulness with ourselves, we practice self-validation before we reach out to our loved ones, we also want to notice our judgments, and we want to bring down our self-judgments. And I think that can be very helpful in really figuring out how, you know, what the next step is or how we want to approach our loved ones and our relationships. And by the way, feel free, everyone, to use, I guess you could if you had the slides and you're adept at PowerPoint, but feel free to incorporate our slides in your teaching. That's what they're there for, really.
I just want to say I made it a PDF to send out to people just because most people can open things and not everybody has PowerPoint. But if you would like the actual PowerPoint slides, just shoot me an email and I'll be happy to send them to you.
So we can send them to our family members also, Donna?
I don't know that I would send them to family members. I'm thinking more for teaching purposes.
So to use it during a class.
Yes,
exactly.
To use during a class.
Exactly.
I mean, you're welcome to take the information, but for those of you who are proficient in PowerPoint and use it in your teaching, I'm happy to give you the actual slides because it's faster to modify somebody's actual slide than to recreate it.
Yeah, okay. Amy, you heard that, I hope.
I just wanted to add one thing that's especially valuable. I listen very closely to the activity because we spend a lot of time on observing limits, but we actually hadn't developed an activity around it, and that was such a solid, clarifying activity that we'll be stealing it as soon as we can.
Yeah, steal it.
Well,
right?
this is exactly why, Matt, we, Donna and I, brainstormed on slide 16 to just come up with some broad categories of things we've heard so that people people can say, oh, yeah, I get these text messages at 2 in the morning, and if I don't remember to turn the bell off on my phone, or my dilemma is that I want to keep the bell on because in case there's an emergency, but on the other hand, I don't want text messages. So we try to brainstorm as a way of springboarding others to generate some ideas for themselves. I think another starting point, everyone, is to start with yourself. I particularly observe limits on how late I'm going to work every evening, or when I'll take phone calls, or when I won't, personal phone calls, that is, or when I'm just tired of talking. And I think if we look at how we preserve our own energy and manage our own lives, I think that also will help in generalizing this strategy. The other thing I wanted to mention is, for example, slide number 12, I think, is a wonderful summary on how to identify and communicate limits. And as long as you're using, in my opinion, as long as you're using the citation, in other words, from Sherry Manning, for example, in that complete slide, I think that can be a great summary slide to share with families. So you may want to adapt some of this, the how-to slides, one or two of them that might help your families rather than, you know, in other words, expanding this material from leader use to using it with your families, Anne and Matt in particular.
And, okay. All right. That sounds good.
In response to your question, too, Anne, about sharing things with family members, if they find some of the steps or whatever and it helps them to have as a guideline, feel free to, you know, to share that with them. Any kind of tips or tools that can help a family member practice, like we do with our rights and responsibilities and whatever, then be sure and share them.
Yeah, practice is very good. And actually, when Matthew and I have to do an observing of limits, we write it down and we discuss it and we fix it and have it ready. And then when we call our kids or see them, we'll have already practiced it. And
mm-hmm.
we know what we want to do. And we did one of the things that we did years and years ago is we did turn off our phones after 9:30, and we don't answer the phone after 9:30. But my son would call it 9:28. So he answers that, okay. But he's made a lot of progress. He's really doing very well.
Well, then, in that case, you'd have to put another limit on the limit, which is not only do I turn off the phone, but I end the conversation. So if you want more than, you know, a little bit of a reverence there, if you want more than a two-minute conversation, dear, call a little earlier.
It's an emergency type of thing. And so we say, all right, well, tell us the meeting, and then we hang up. We'll talk in the morning. So we've done that. Yeah. All right, I'm going
And before we stop the last slide, it's probably the most important. We want to thank everyone who has written material and generated ideas and theories to contribute to this presentation. And, of course, you're amazing for year after year providing this wonderful teaching opportunity, and Matt for helping with the technology and for all your years of teaching. So we want to really, really thank you all. Even though we put the thank you in the sand, that was not a boundary. And we want to wish everyone the happiest and the healthiest and the most effective and fun new year and holiday season ever. Be skillful. Don't forget your skills.
Yeah. Thank you so much,
ladies.
You.
That was
You're
great.
Terrific. Thank you so much.
You enjoyed it.
And everyone have a good holiday. Okay? Thank you.
Take care.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye.